everybody. Welcome to the Jeff Rubin Show. I am Jeff Rubin, and today we are talking to Denise DuVernay and Dr. Karma Waltonen, who have together published two books about The Simpsons. The first one is called The Simpsons in the Classroom, Embiggening the Learning Experience with the Wisdom of Springfield. And the second is The Simpsons, Beloved Springfield, Essays on the Series and Town That Are Part of Us All. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let me just figure out who is who real quick. Karma, where are you calling in from today?
I'm in Davis, California.
Okay. And Denise, where are you calling in from?
I'm in beautiful Chicago, Illinois.
So I'm in New York, so we're spread across the country. You guys both work in academia. Is that correct?
Yes. I teach at the University of California, Davis.
And I am no longer teaching, but I am still in academia. I do higher ed advancement for Loyola University Chicago.
And you both love The Simpsons.
Way too much, yes.
And how did you guys meet? You're not in the same city. Did you meet through The Simpsons? I'm just projecting one of the two things I know about you onto the relationship. How did you guys meet?
We were both getting our master's degrees at Florida State University 20 years ago. And I was 1 year ahead of Denise. And
I was 11.
You were 11?
I was 11 years old. I was dookie, just so we're clear. I was making a joke.
I don't think she likes me saying it was 20 years ago, even though it was.
it was exactly 20 years ago that we met.
Yeah, so one of the opportunities they had there was to let those grad students create a specialty writing course. And so I did mine on The Simpsons. And then when I left, Denise took that course and revised it. And so then she was teaching it once I had moved out to California.
And do you guys remember, I'm actually glad we got the 20 years ago, because that helps orient us in terms of The Simpsons. This is about season 10 of The Simpsons. So we're potentially exiting the golden era of The Simpsons, depending on exactly where you draw the line or whatever. But I guess, do you guys remember, were you always Simpsons fans? What are your earliest memories of, watching The Simpsons? I do remember, even though I was young, I remember when I first heard about The Simpsons.
Denise, you want to go first?
Sure. Well, we go back. The Simpsons started when we were in high school. And both of us actually remember the shorts on the Tracy Ullman show. And so, and Karma actually recorded it on her VCR religiously in high school and basically forever. So I watched it not as religiously as a youngin, but quite a bit in the earliest years, from 1987 or 1989 on. So our history goes way back. And both of us also kind of bristle at the term the golden years.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know that's a whole other topic. Maybe we can get into that, but I just want to,
another whole show, which actually we don't need to get into because it's covered in the introduction to our book. So if your listeners are curious, they just need to read the introduction to our book.
Okay. Well, maybe we can circle back to that. But the thing I guess I want to know about, watching The Simpsons when it first comes out in high school, I guess you're recording it. You probably weren't doing that with a lot of shows. It was kind of an instant phenomenon. But you just you immediately knew, this was a great thing. And, I mean, are you surprised that here you are, all these years later and that, The Simpsons, the show you were into, is still a major part of your life, or would you have seen that happening then?
I'm definitely surprised. We know a lot of people on the show now, and they also say, if somebody had told them that they were still going to be working on a sitcom 3 decades later, that just doesn't happen. And so, most shows don't get this kind of run. And so we're all definitely surprised, but I do wish I could go back to younger Karma and explain how important this obsession really was. But I mean, it spoke to me right away. I was watching that first Tracy Ullman show that they were on because I'd heard that Tracy Ullman was going to be the next Carol Burnett, who was a hero of mine. And so I was tuning in to check out some awesome, female-run sketch comedy. And then they had this little clip of these characters. And that very first little clip, the parents are putting the kids to bed. And when Marge sings the Rock-a-Bye Baby song to Maggie, and Maggie's picturing falling out of a tree, presumably to her death, I just could not stop laughing because I had already argued to people that that song is messed up and that it's not actually an appropriate thing to sing to little babies if they can speak English anyway. and so they had me right away. And then that family was more like my family than the other shows on TV. Like in the opening credits, that family is sitting down to watch TV. And, right. You know, the other families didn't do that. And so they're having dinner sometimes in front of the TV. And my family did that. And the parents were trying, but were sometimes failing at being good parents. And my family was like that. And the Simpsons kids didn't like being dragged to church. And, also didn't like, you know, it was so much more realistic in their imperfectness.
So now to flash forward, you're in academia and you're teaching and putting together courses and that sort of thing, or thinking about that at least. Like, when we're talking about like using the Simpsons in the classroom, are you teaching about the Simpsons and there's things we can learn through the show, or using the show as a tool to teach about other concepts, or both?
Oh, yes. It's definitely both. It depends on the class. And so like in a Simpsons class where that's the main focus, it often, in a lot of ways, ends up being a way into American studies.
Interesting.
And so, I'll have students who are fans, and then I'll have students who've never watched the show before because they weren't allowed to. And then they're sort of thumbing their nose at mom and dad because now, you know, they're like, haha, I'm in college and I'm watching it for credit. And then I'll have some students who are from other countries who understand that this is a major point of cultural knowledge. And so that kind of course is divided, you know, by sort of themes. And so one class will be looking at sort of the Simpsons and religion in America. And then another one will do, you know, the Simpsons and politics in America. And so, you know, in that way, you're of course looking at the show, but you're looking really at what the show reflects about us.
So this Simpsons is an extremely special TV show. We'll all agree The Simpsons is good, but like, what is it? Like, what is I guess I'm wondering, like, what is the educational value? Like, what is it about The Simpsons that makes it a good tool for this? Could you do this with like any TV show that lasted several hundred episodes?
Not any. I mean,
what is it that makes The Simpsons special then, that like makes it a good tool for this?
Well, part of it is that it's animated and is done in, you know, sort of the single camera style, what we call it now, without a laugh track and stuff. Because then they go out into the world. Traditional sitcoms are in, you know, three locations, really, and you're not engaging with politics and you're not engaging with the community. And The Simpsons, you know, they are doing that. I mean, you can do some things with a traditional family sitcom and talk about America, but, you know, you're not going to have someone on that kind of sitcom having a fist fight with George Bush.
Right. You can currently hear me dragging my manuscript for What Big Bang Theory Teaches Us About Social Dynamics into the recycling bin. Bazinga, What the Big Bang Theory Teaches Us About Social Dynamics.
They do, but it's just, I don't think you could have as many different kinds of weeks. I mean, when I, on the quarter system, where I only have 10 weeks of them, we can only scratch the surface of so many things. And, you know, that's because their world is so big. I don't know, Denise, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you hit all the major points. The fact that they aren't constrained by the characters aging and by locations, by sets. They aren't constrained, and they aren't constrained by which actors they can hire. If they can't hire an actor, they have a room full of talent to do the voice, or to do a voice that's similar, and we know who it's supposed to be.
Right.
And they can go to Japan, and they can go to Australia, and they can go to Brazil, and they can piss off a lot of people. But that also goes back to the point that a lot of people miss, which is when they do these things like go to Australia and go to Brazil and these other places and play with these stereotypes. And what they're really doing is playing with the American stereotype of the ugly American who doesn't understand other cultures. And they aren't making fun of the other culture. They're making fun of us.
I mean, I guess Homer, I feel like, is like Mickey Mouse, and he's just like an icon all over the world. But are there students who come in and they just have, I guess I don't know, like for me growing up, I watched The Simpsons 2 to 3 times a day, every single day for what, as I recall, was my entire life. And I like, but now like people consume TV differently and so forth. And like, I guess I'm wondering if kids have that relationship with The Simpsons anymore, you know? Now it's on Disney Plus. Maybe that'll change, but I guess I'm wondering if, like, kids, do you meet people who, like, I don't know, they have the show in their bones? There are kids who just like, don't know it anymore?
There are a lot of kids who don't know it anymore. I mean, they've heard of it.
Everyone knows Homer and Bart, I would imagine.
Right. But they associate it with their parents' generation, right? With
Ouch.
Us. I know. So they think that because we're lame, that show must be lame.
In their defense, we are pretty lame. they're not wrong. We are lame.
Usually. But, you know. And yeah, so that can be disheartening. And then, of course, when they watch it, they go, oh, this, you know, this is something important. Although sometimes they'll see that, you know, it's tamer than like Archer or, you know, Robot Chicken or something. And so they'll somehow think that there's a difference there. And I just explained to them, except for we wouldn't have Archer and Robot Chicken if it weren't for The Simpsons.
Of course, we wouldn't have anything. But does it still work? We wouldn't have anything. Does it still play, though, with kids? Are there any kids who are just like, this is dumb. Family Guy's 10 times better. I'm sure there are. But I guess, like, there's so many pop culture references. And, like, not only are the episodes 20, 30 years old, but the references they make are, like, 10, 20 years old. So, you know, I can imagine they make, like, you know, a Dinah Shore reference or Paul Anka or whatever, and kids are just like, who cares, you know?
Yeah, well, that was one of the fun things. Talk about Paul Anka. Yeah.
That was one of the fun things about watching it with my dad back in the day and before Wikipedia, where he would be laughing at a joke that I did not get. And so he would explain to me who Rory Calhoun was. He was the one who told me who Steve and Edie were.
There's so many things I only know about via The Simpsons. I only know who Rory Calhoun is because of The Simpsons. 100%.
Me too.
I could make a long list of things I only know. Paul Anka is probably the thing I really only know.
But he was always standing up and walking. How could you not?
Right. Me too. Those are two examples off the top of my head, but I'm sure if I sat down and thought about it with a piece of paper and a pencil, I could come up with numerous examples of, you know, things, the cultural references, pop culture icons from previous generations that I would have never heard of had it not been for The Simpsons. And this stuff makes you smarter.
Mm-hmm.
So let's imagine I'm taking a 10-week course where I'm going to learn about, I don't know, something, I guess American history through The Simpsons. Like, how do you start? Like, is it, I mean, do I have a syllabus with like season 4 on DVD, season 15 on DVD, and like specific episodes to watch? Like, how do you just get people rolling? Like, do they watch specific scenes, specific jokes, specific episodes?
There is a syllabus. They have episodes that they need to be able to watch. And in fact, one of the things that I have to figure out for the next time I teach it is how that works, because now that all the stuff is on Disney Plus, it's going to be a little harder for the students, because it's weird to put on a syllabus that you have to have, you know.
Right. But like
Disney
6
Plus.
Months ago, you had to have FXX World or whatever, and like that needed a cable subscription, I think.
But my students were able to access through sort of the negotiation that my school has with our local cable company, my students were able to do it illegally.
I see. Yeah.
A lot of people were doing it illegally because it was a little easier, but they still could access it. Through the regular cable stuff. But yeah, so there is that syllabus there. But one of the ways I get them started is one of the first assignments is to interview someone who remembers when the TV show was new.
Oh my God.
And they have to ask about how TV worked back then, because my students really don't understand how few channels we had.
That's so funny, yeah.
In fact, one student called her mother a liar. when her mom told her how many channels there were. And then the student wrote a different number in her journal. And then when we were talking about it in class, the student goes, "Oh no, oh no." And I said, "What?" And she goes, "I called my mom a liar. I told her there were never that few." And I said, "You better call your mom right after class."
So fun to accuse your mom of being a liar. But just
and like, apologize it, that you thought you knew more about your mom's childhood.
But when you say did. Interview someone who remembers when the show first aired, this is, I think, not just because we're having this conversation, but just because my brain has been so warped by The Simpsons. I imagine I'm going and I have to go talk to Grandpa Simpson. And he's like, you know, everyone was doing the Bartman. And like, you know, it's like it sounds like that sort of thing. So what do students learn when they talk? I mean, I guess they learn. I didn't even think about it, but The Simpsons is also important in the history of TV. It's the first hit on Fox, mm-hmm. which is like the first new network in several decades or whatever. Mm-hmm. What else do students get out of that conversation?
Well, the TV just went off at one point. Do you remember that?
What do you mean?
Like one in the morning?
Oh.
Yeah, but it's just like there's no TV now. Either go to bed or read a book or drink sadly staring at the wall.
Yeah, I don't really remember that. I'm a little younger than you guys, and I do remember when The Simpsons came out, but I was like about Bart's age, I guess, when The Simpsons came out. I was like 8 or 9. So
you weren't allowed to stay up that late.
Yeah, I guess that's right. I don't remember. I don't have any recollection of like TV was always on as far as I can remember. But the thing that
and different
I think
channels
about,
would play a different song. It would play like God Bless America,
mm-hmm.
or America the Beautiful. They would play a different song and then they would and then it would just go away.
Yeah.
I remember this done. Like babysitting when I was like 13, 14 years old and the parents weren't home yet and I would just be like, "Okay, now it's dark. It's late, there's no TV to keep me company." I would listen to their Led Zeppelin albums and read and wait for them to get home. And it was kind of scary. It was weird.
The thing I think about with The Simpsons, and I already mentioned it, that if I described it, I would sound 100 years old to someone mm-hmm. who is young today, is that I would watch The Simpsons in syndication. Like this idea of watching it in syndication. I'd watch 2 episodes a day, every single day after school for years and years and years. And there was one episode, the one where Apu goes to India, that I just mm-hmm. never saw for whatever reason. Like, I just like was always missing that episode. And if you missed it, you had to wait like the entire cycle again to try to catch it. And like you couldn't. And anyway, just like the idea that there's this show I love. I've seen all several hundred episodes, but there's one I just can't quite see. I can't right. find it. Is like ancient already, you know?
Yeah.
So, OK, well, now you've
so,
got.
So
sorry.
When I was teaching the writing about The Simpsons class at Florida State, I didn't have my VHS tapes of The Simpsons because they were in Minnesota, where I'm from. And I really wanted to use Lisa on Ice. And I didn't have all of them, but I had seasons, you know, 6 and 7. And I didn't have those VHS tapes. And I really wanted to use Lisa on Ice in class. And it kept not coming on in syndication. And I actually called up the local Fox channel and said, "What can we do? Can you help me?" And they explained all of this to me, that they get these episodes, they're allowed to use them a certain number of times, blah, blah, blah. And he actually made it happen for me and told me which day he would put it on so that I could record it. So
oh
that
my
I could
God,
use
that's
it in
what
class
I needed to
semester.
Do. I never thought of that. That's brilliant.
Well, I told him I told him what I was doing. I think if you were just like, "Hey, I really have, I've never seen this." Maybe he would have. I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends on your town
on your affiliate.
Cool how cool the Fox affiliate was. But you know, shout out to that guy 20 years ago, or well, 19 years ago, who did this for me. Do you remember that, Karma? Did I tell you about that at the time?
I don't remember that at
California?
All.
But he did that, and he told me which day it would be on so that I could record it, and then I was able to use it the next semester. Because I really wanted to use Lisa on Ice, and it never came on. And what you just said about never seeing that episode, the Homer and Apu episode, just reminded me of that.
This is a great episode. This is the one where Lisa and Bart both join the hockey team. Why that episode? Do you remember like why it was like you needed that specific episode for your class?
I think that I was doing something on sports. I think I wanted to do a little unit on sports. It could have been about family, but I'm pretty sure it was a little. I think I was doing a section on sports and how important sports are to, you know, the American identity, probably. And I probably did the Bart Starr episode as well, which I knew that I know that I have on, or I had at the time on VHS.
Right, because the hockey one's not, it's about your kids playing sports, right? And like, you know,
right,
your kids
pushing
winning and
your
losing.
Kids Pee-wee teams because of your own lost dreams of glory, right?
So this is what I really want to understand from you guys is, okay, you've introduced the children to the idea that TV used to be different, and there's this show, The Simpsons, and you've maybe even convinced them that it's a really good show and they need to like it. Like, which of the 8,000 episodes do you have them watch? Like, where do you even start?
Well, it goes, yeah, yeah. You start with, I know Karma does a thing where you have them vote on what you want the last theme to be, right, Karma?
Mm-hmm.
But we always, but it depends on what the class is. So if it's a general writing class, I kind of would figure out what the good themes would be and what might be kind of controversial, what might be kind of sexy, what I think might get good class discussions.
So what are some example themes?
What are some example themes? Politics, mm-hmm. sex, sports,
gender karma, roles,
gender. Yeah.
We've looked at education too. I mean, these are students in college and we do get to see quite a few college episodes, for example. I really like on the first day showing the clip from where Lisa's pretending to be a college student and then she's in a class that's dissecting intellectually itchy and scratchy cartoons. And
little girl in the big pen, right?
Because it definitely seems like they're making fun of people like us who teach The Simpsons. And
there's a cat on the table and no one cares.
Yeah. So, and that's an interesting way to go into it. Just like it's, like if we were back at Florida State now, we could show the clip, where Maggie is being tested in terms of her IQ. And at one point it's determined that she's smart enough to teach at Florida State.
The Simon Cowell voiced character. Yeah. She's already smart enough. Right.
Do you guys have any go-to themes or episodes that you found are particularly good at getting discussion going in the classroom?
Much a Poo About Nothing.
That's the one I never saw, right?
No. So
you never saw Homer in a Poo, right, Karma?
Mm-hmm.
Which one's Much a Poo About Nothing?
That's the immigration episode, the famous immigration
episode. Oh, sure, yeah. No on 24. No on that one.
That's the one.
Passed in a landslide.
So that one, what is it? I mean, that one has a lot. I mean, I don't know. I guess I haven't seen that one in a while. Like, immigration so much more kind of in the news, I guess. What do people talk about when they watch that episode? The NYMets?
The NYMets.
That are my favorite squadron.
For sure. Your parents were Herb and Judy. Nahama, piece of petal on.
Okay, yes. Do you watch the episode together or do you watch it or do people watch it at home?
They generally watch it at home, but there might be one that we watch together.
It's interesting watching The Simpsons in a group. And I have two quick things I'm going to talk to you about. One is The Simpsons movie. I remember when I went and saw The Simpsons movie, which is not my favorite Simpsons thing. It's fine or whatever. But I remember the real joy of that experience was just being in a room after decades of watching The Simpsons by myself and laughing really hard, maybe with some friends here and there, to be in a room with hundreds of Simpsons fans who knew all the minor characters. And like to watch movies you watch in a group, but The Simpsons is a TV show and it's you're usually watching it by yourself. And the other thing I think about is there's a Simpsons trivia night here in Brooklyn. There's a Simpsons trivia night in a lot of places, but there's a great one here in Brooklyn. They've been on the podcast before. And at the trivia night, they'll screen two or three episodes. These are the most hardcore Simpsons fans in New York in this room. You know, everyone's like laughing like 2 seconds before the joke hits because everyone knows at a very deep level. And it's just it's kind of a different viewing experience because I'm so used to watching it by yourself and it's such a dense show. I'm wondering, with all that in mind, when you screen it in the classroom, do you feel like it changes the viewing experience a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
I definitely. And I'm always kind of surprised to, I like to try to predict where the laughs are going to be and if I'm right or if I'm wrong. And I've shown it in different classes and different, in the same day, but to different groups. And the laughs will be in different places, which I find completely interesting. It's the dynamic of the group. It's totally different. And we have the Woohoo Simpsons trivia in Chicago too. That's what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I know Brooklyn has, yeah. And I've gone there a few times and it is a lot of fun. It is really intense to be with a group of people who know so much about every
Yeah, I
piece of minutia from those
no
seasons.
Help to my team, and like you guys can hear, like I like The Simpsons. I am no help to this team, you know. If you guys are interested, and I mean the listeners too, we did have them. If you search, it's a while back now, but we had them. They came on the podcast, and we did like a round of Simpsons trivia with some super fans on the podcast. So if you want to go back and hear just like how hardcore that gets, I would encourage you to do so. So like what else, like what are some like surprising things that like you wouldn't expect that you can use The Simpsons as like a can opener to get into, but like actually you can?
I feel like I've used it for so many things. But I guess like in, I teach a lot of very specialty writing courses for my graduating seniors, and so I teach classes like writing in the health professions and writing in international relations, and writing in social justice. And so on some days, one of the things we'll talk about is how a certain profession is explored in the media. Like with my pre-med students, we talk, for example, about how part of the importance in them as scientists learning to communicate for a lay audience is that we need more scientists doing that communication rather than just counting on the media. And so, for, you know, one example is there's basically one example that I know of a woman having a heart attack in a fiction program. But of course, that's our number one killer as well. It's just that women then get misdiagnosed because when people think heart attack, they think men. And so, you know, we then look at how a thing like medicine, how a thing like healthcare is treated in these other shows. And so I'll have the students look at a show of their choice and write a journal about it, but then we'll watch an episode of The Simpsons together and to think about what happens. Like when we recently did the episode where Homer has to have a triple bypass. And of course I was having to update the numbers for them in terms of like what an uninsured patient's triple bypass would cost today.
Is Homer I haven't seen that one in a while, I guess, either. Or, since I've gained the most cursory knowledge of how insurance works, is Homer uninsured?
He's uninsured in that episode. Yeah.
Doesn't he get, like, I'm such an adult now, doesn't he get insurance through his job at the nuclear power plant? Is that addressed?
They traded it for something else.
Yes, that's right.
So, you know, it was like a pool table or something in their union meeting room.
Right, they traded insurance
for that.
Beer, maybe. Or was that the, yeah, that the dental plan they traded for beer?
That was the dental plan with the beer. But this, I think, was a pool table. And so, yeah, he's having to. And that's why, like, Dr. Nick does it for, you know, for like $300 and almost screws it up. And that's, of course, I mean, the watching a bunch of pre-meds watch Dr. Nick do surgery is glorious, glorious thing. And when Dr. Nick is singing his little song about the data is connected to the data, the red thing's connected to my wristwatch.
I forgot about that. You made me laugh at that just now. But yeah. Wait, they were pre-med students, did you say?
Yeah, so this is a writing in the health professions class for students who are going to go off and be doctors and veterinarians. And
is it writing in the health profession and The Simpsons, or you're just using The Simpsons in this one thing?
No, I'm just using The Simpsons. It's not a class on The Simpsons.
Gotcha.
It's just I pull them in for
but
one of
the lessons. It is interesting. I mean, there's so many Simpsons, and there's so many characters, and you're right. Like, if you wanted to, you probably could do 10 weeks about medicine and The Simpsons and, like, Dr. Hibbert and Nick Rivera and, like, what they say about how people react to medicine and how people perceive doctors and all that. Like, even just something like medicine and like Dr. Hibbert and Dr. Nick are like, I don't know, not even in the top 40 most important characters on the show or something,
right?
And yet when you start to think, like, what does The Simpsons have to say about medicine, like I can already think of many episodes, many like interesting jokes or whatever that, you know, start to get at that. So is that it then? Is it like whatever, I mean, is it just that you can take The Simpsons and they've done so much that you can use it to look at almost anything and just see like what sharp satirical writers have to say, what they think is funny about topic X. Is that right?
Basically. And I mean, there's even an article, this was published a really long time ago, but in the, there's a Canadian medical journal that two authors wrote a satiric essay that got published, where they were comparing Dr. Nick to Dr. Hibbert. And it was satiric because they were arguing that Dr. Nick, because he always just does what the patient wants him to do, is the superior doctor instead of doing what's good for the patient. And of course, that was a point that the writers were trying to make about a movement into sort of seeing the patient as a consumer, mm-hmm. as opposed to seeing yourself as an expert who has, you know,
right,
knowledge to give to that person. And but it's really nice for my students to see that, you know, writing about stuff like this is something that they can do in their professional lives, and that these are issues that they have to keep dealing with. Like when I was mentioning, you know, that they need to know how things are shown in the media. Recently, my primary care physician asked me what actually good health science writing stuff I was reading. And so I gave him the recommendations and I said, but why? What are you doing? And he said, well, I'm trying to understand my patients who are against vaccinations. So I've been reading what they read. And I said, oh no, oh, Paul, I'm so sorry. But of course he's being a good doctor because he's trying to understand the information that they're taking in and trying to understand that point of view, you know, so that he can better medically counter it. But, you know, it's The Simpsons and other media is how a lot of people do get information about how the world works.
Yeah, I mean, I think The Simpsons was enormously influential on my worldview, possibly more than like my parents, you know, like it got into my brain and so much of it that I don't know, like, what do you think? Let's say, hypothetically, there is a young child and he just watches an hour of The Simpsons every day. Like, what do you think? I mean, what would you expect his point of view to be? Like, what do you think? What kind of effect do you think that would have on someone? And is it me?
Well, it depends on what else this child is doing with it, right? Which is kind of what I would do with the show is analysis and deep digging, like when I used it in my literature classes, is treating it like another piece of literature. And when I got pushback from the students, I would say, well, hold on a second. Why isn't it important to analyze The Simpsons the way that we analyze Shakespeare and poetry and the short stories that I'm assigning to you? And they would say, because it's just dumb. It's just TV. And I'd be like, well, hold on a second. You guys watched an hour of this every day after school. You consumed a lot of it, just, you know, just like Jeff Rubin. So why, if anything should be analyzed, shouldn't it be the television you watch? Let's talk about this. Right. So I think it really depends on, you know, if we're consuming so much media and if children are consuming so much media, then are, you know, do they have older siblings that are talking about it with them or parents who are talking about it with them? That's the important thing. I mean, some kids on their own are going to like understand the satire and they're going to understand the jokes and they're going to become smarter people. Right. But right. Not everybody is going to be able to do that on their own.
I got halfway there. If you guys, do you guys like, if you were teaching, I don't know, maybe like an adult class, and it wasn't even really a class. It was just the idea was you're going to host a series of spirited conversations inspired by The Simpsons, like a Simpsons book club, I guess, you know, like everyone watches Simpsons, then we're going to get together and discuss it. Like, what are the episodes you would pick for such a club?
Maybe Streetcar Named Marge, maybe?
Why that one? That's the one, I mean, that's the one where Marge is in A Streetcar Named Desire with Ned Flanders. What is it about that one? Why that one jumped to your mind first?
Well, that jumps to my mind first because people are familiar with Streetcar Named Desire. It's pretty ubiquitous.
I gotta tell you, I don't know anything about, I know, like, Stella, this is another thing I only know about via The Simpsons. Like, I think I could do, like, 30% of the plot of Streetcar Named Desire only because of The Simpsons, you know, because of that episode.
Well. The
most
way
people
that,
do, though. I'm on the edge here. Okay.
The way that the production that the musical production that was put on in Springfield is considerably different.
That's funny. It's like I have this weird idea of what it is.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. And actually, the play and then the film version are also pretty different, particularly in the ending. So I'm just throwing that out there. That's something that you probably should know.
So I should revisit it before I, like, lie to anyone and tell them I've seen Streetcar.
Yeah.
Okay, but aside, my own ignorance aside, what is it about this episode?
It's as ubiquitous as I think it is. The idea of I think Karma should talk to this, because Karma and I have had this conversation a lot, and Karma is much more well-versed in musical theater than I am. But the idea of why things are musicalized for the American, for the American audience, and how it's more palatable that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, when I've done Streetcar Named Desire, we talk about Wicked, because a lot of the students at least know the story of that. And the book Wicked ends really, really sadly. And then there's this sort of miraculous saving of two characters and a love story at the very end of the very successful musical. And basically the same thing happens in Streetcar and The Simpsons, where they take this moment where a rape victim is about to be institutionalized because her sister doesn't believe her. And they make it into a song about how you should always trust strangers.
Yeah. I guess I never... That's funny, because this is what's so great about the show, and I just watched a few episodes last night to kind of get in the mood. It's like, no matter how many times I've seen this episode, these shows, there's still jokes I'm learning about. I've seen that episode 1,000 times. I don't think I ever fully appreciated how funny, like, what they're doing there exactly, because I didn't have that history. That's so funny.
Yeah, it's such a strange moment. It's really weird. But that episode,
and the juxtaposition of making Ned like the Stanley character is just crazy. And then is this the first time we find out how sexy Ned is without his clothes on?
I think so.
I think it is.
Stupid, so he rips sexy off Flanders. His shirt. That's a different episode, but still.
Yeah. That's a different episode. But when he rips off his shirt and he's just, you know, got this six pack and those shoulders, and he's, you know. But then also it's kind of the quintessential episode too, in the way that like Homer has this marvelous revelation at the end with the help of Lisa that says, you know, that's like, I'm not going to take Marge for granted anymore. I realize how lucky I am. She's amazing. And then, you know, in true sitcom fashion, we're back to the status quo at the beginning of the next episode, where he's back to taking Marge for granted once again.
Do you guys, like, you mentioned that you've been in touch with some people who work on the show. What do they think about all this?
About all this?
I don't know. I guess, what do they think? I don't know. How do they feel? What's their reaction to, I'm certain when they're writing the episode, they're not thinking ahead to someone like seriously studying it in an academic setting.
No, they're not.
So I don't know. How do they feel about people studying their show like this? Like, it's not what it's intended for, but it's obviously like there. What's the reaction been?
Well, we've never had a negative reaction except for from Fox Legal, which we don't have to worry about anymore. So
Disney Legal, they're much easier, right?
Well, we shall see.
No. I have a publisher trying to get permission now to quote a scene in a forthcoming textbook, so we'll see.
When all of this was first starting, when we were working on the first book, The Simpsons in the Classroom, one of the first things we did was set up a Twitter account for it, and which is still in existence today. It's called Simpsonology, and I had flippantly posted a tweet that said, this linguistics chapter is kicking my ass, because I was drafting the chapter on The Simpsons and linguistics. And a lot of it was about how you can use it in the linguistics classroom and about their word coinage and that kind of thing. And we got an @reply from Tubatron that said, I would so fail your class. And I didn't know who Tubatron was.
I don't know who Tubatron is now. Should I know who Tubatron is?
Well, yes, you should. So I clicked on it and I was like, oh, that's a cute thing to say. Who is this Tubatron? It's David freaking Silverman.
Oh, I know who that is.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh my God, David Silverman just @replied us. And I kind of hyperventilated and called Karma, and it was this great moment. And then shortly thereafter, we heard from Chris Ledesma, who's still a music director, music editor. He's been on the show the whole entire time. and Josh Weinstein, and who we still have occasional contact with, and just everybody's. So those are the main people who reached out to us in the beginning with really encouraging, nice things to say, and they all received copies of the book. Yeah, they're very nice people, and so we've never had anybody from the show say, you know, you're wrong, or we don't like you doing this, or anything like that. The only thing was just, you know, when we were trying to get permissions from Fox Legal for various things, you know, like, hey, would this fall within fair use, or can we use this quote, or how long, you know, is this too long, or is this fine? And they wouldn't tell us. They would just say, keep it within fair use. And we're like, what does that mean? Is this okay with you? And they would not, you know, budge with any sort of help. And then, of course, then we were on their radar. But other than that, we've had no, we never had any trouble with Fox Legal or anything. We just didn't get any answers from them. So
right. No, but I think they've been tickled and bemused.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I actually asked Chris Ledesma a question about music when it occurred to me that there were several episodes with spiritual quests in them that also featured the song Short Shorts. And there were like three of those. And so I asked Chris, I said, I'm assuming this is a total coincidence instead of, you know, some really subtle Simpsons brainwashing that to become more spiritually enlightened, you need to wear fewer clothes. And Chris actually took that question to a writer and producer meeting, and he recorded the answer for me, which was amazing. But, you know, after he posed the question, there was a silence, and then somebody was like, she's right. That song is in three episodes about quests. And then, you know, then it was turned into a discussion of how nerdy I must be to have noticed. and of course I am. But yeah, I mean, they're not sitting there putting in jokes like that just to have us notice that across the years this happens. But they also know that they're writing a really smart show. I mean, these writers are so smart.
Right.
And so, you know, that's coming through.
I want to ask quickly about the linguistics thing, because we either just did or will soon be doing a linguistics episode of this podcast, depending on what order they come out. So I'm just curious, what The Simpsons has coined, I guess, a lot of words. We already mentioned embiggened, dough, obviously. What else? What is the connection between The Simpsons and linguistics? What can you learn from that?
Well, there was another point that was made in the chapter about going back to Much Apu About Nothing, about kind of respect for the language, and, you know, because grammar is a subdiscipline of linguistics, and this idea of when, you know, when Mo says, you know, what really aggravates me. Is that what he says?
Mm-hmm.
They ain't never
about immigrants. The language. Don't learn themselves the language.
Yeah. Right. And so it's kind of the conversation about grammar and about the power of using the language. So that was definitely something that we discussed in the chapter. And then I think there was like a big thing in there about the word meh. M-E-H.
Yeah.
Meh.
And
yeah.
And kind of, I think it was started with Lisa, right?
Yeah.
Lisa was the first to use it. And then it became this kind of nationwide phenomenon.
Yeah. But, I mean, obviously everyone connects Doe to Homer, but I've said meh a lot, and hopefully not too much. But, you know, I, as a Simpsons fan, never made the connection that meh is something we got from Lisa Simpson, or she at least helped popularize.
And the word cromulent has appeared in many places. And I had done a search and found that there was a Shakespeare company called the Cromulent Shakespeare Company, I think in the Twin Cities. There was, I think, a bakery. I can't remember, but there was just,
Yeah, it's something scientists say to each other, too. Say that's like, a perfectly cromulent theory.
Right. And does it have a definition? Because as used in the show, I think it sort of means like everything and nothing. It means kind of like it is okay. Like it's an adjective,
I think
I guess.
It's like copacetic, right?
It's sort of an,
just fine.
It's an all-purpose adjective you can put in front of everything and like it kind of makes sense.
It's valid-y, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's valid.
You know, we really haven't talked much about, like, the book itself. Like, I now see your approach. I see the philosophy. If I'm holding the book, if I'm a teacher and I'm interested in the book, like, what will I find in the book?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. We've been talking about teaching, and this is the old book. This is the first book, The Simpsons in the Classroom. We haven't really talked about the new book
at
all.
I want to get to that new book, too.
So should I grab it and find the table of contents? Because I don't remember.
Okay, I remember. I have to grab the book.
But I guess like more abstract, like this is for teachers, right? Like this is a book target.
The first one is.
Yeah.
So in the first one, what a lot of people like best is there's actually an episode guide of every episode to date when that book came out, and sort of the different themes that you could use it with. And so, you know, for example, all of those health science episodes would be listed in that guide. But then there's just chapters on how you would use it. And so there's a whole chapter on how you would use it in a literature classroom. There's a chapter about a linguistics classroom. There's the composition stuff. And then, you know, the sort of here's what we would do with cultural studies. Here's what we would do in different social science classes. And then the section on sort of how to understand it as a piece of postmodern literature, which is one of the things I try to make my students grapple with.
What does that mean? What is postmodern literature? I don't know. How does The Simpsons fit into
Homo.
It? Help me grok it.
So
it's like a weird.
It's not weird. That's just what Mo says. Modernism as an art form was a very specific period where people were trying to break free of the conventions of the artists before them in all the different art forms. But of course, even though what they were producing was brand new, that got old after a couple of decades. And so one way to understand postmodern is simply that which then tried to do something different than the modernists were doing. But postmodernism usually means that you have a lot of mixing of high and low culture. And so, you know, we're getting Homer being stupid Homer, but we're also getting Shakespeare references.
Right.
And you get a lot of allusions within a, so all of those references, that's a postmodern technique. And so, yeah, a show that starts with the characters watching the show is postmodern.
Breaking the fourth wall is generally considered a postmodern approach, blurring the lines between the audience and the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay, so that book is The Simpsons in the Classroom, but the new book, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, a little more general audience. It's not just for educators. It is called The Simpsons, right. Beloved Springfield, and this is a book of essays, right?
Right.
So what, I mean, how do you put together a book of essays? Who are the essays all by you, or are there guest essayists?
Guests. Many guests.
As we've just spent some time discussing, when we're talking about The Simpsons, we can talk about anything. We can use it as a springboard to talk. We can use Springfield as a springboard to talk about anything. You like that? That was kind of fun.
That was fun.
I mean, so when you're writing a book of essays about The Simpsons, where do you start? Like, what did you want people to write about? Like, why another book?
Well, you know, we were looking at what was out there, and there's, you know, an entire book about The Simpsons and math. And there's plenty about The Simpsons with religion, but we wanted to fill in some of the gaps. And so Karma posted it on, where did you post it? What, on UPenn?
Yeah. It's an academic sort of place where people post their call for papers.
And we kind of put the word out on social media that we wanted to kind of get some abstracts for a collection of essays of kind of filling in the gaps of not just the scholarship, but the discussion of, you know, okay, we're going on 30 years here. What essays, what conversations have people not had yet about the show? And so we received a whole mess of abstracts, and it took a while to filter through them and pick out which ones we wanted to see as full essays. And then we edited them, and we have them from all over the States. We have a contributor from England, a contributor from Australia, South Africa, right, Karma? You sent the book out.
And what did people write about? What were the gaps that you discovered that hadn't been covered yet?
Well, there's a whole chapter on the films of Alfred Hitchcock and how they show up in The Simpsons quite a bit. There's actually a chapter on a teacher from Minnesota, actually, who taught with The Simpsons. And it's just kind of interesting because it's a completely different approach than ours, because she was a skeptic going in, which is kind of a nice read. And then she writes about discovering the magic of using The Simpsons in the classroom.
And after she had thought it was dumb. Yeah.
Yeah. After she had thought, oh, this is.
Do you guys ever get pushback like that? Because, I mean, this is like ancient history already, but The Simpsons was at a time like a controversial show, and like Bart was a bad influence, and there's probably still parents out there who think, you know, it's a waste of time or whatever. Have you ever gotten any pushback like that?
Well, my dad told me that I was part of the reason that the American educational system is going downhill.
So, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I had a student who said that her dad said that my class was what was wrong with American education. My grandmother, when The Simpsons first came on, said that it was just the most horrible thing she'd ever seen on television, and that's because Bart called his dad Homer. That's what upset her.
It's so funny how quaint, you know, like.
And of course, I'm thinking, except I, growing up as a little kid, had to be in the room while you were watching 3 hours of soap operas where, you know, like that woman didn't know whether she was pregnant with this brother, that brother, or their dad's baby. And The Simpsons is the worst thing you've ever seen. So, yeah.
It's funny The Simpsons has that reputation because, yeah, Bart can be a bit of a troublemaker. I don't know if you're familiar with The Simpsons, but Bart Simpson, bit of a troublemaker. But even still, like, the family, you know, they eat dinner together. They go to church, even though the kids hate it. You know, they, like, obviously love each other, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's crazy. Like, if you look at something today, like, there's so many more, like, nihilists, like, just straight-up nihilistic TV shows that are, for now, like, The Simpsons is so quaint. It's so funny that it once had this reputation as being, I don't know, a problem, I guess, and now you've turned it around into something that you're actually using in, like, this academic setting. It's very cool.
I think their ACE scores are pretty good, aren't they? The kids' ACE scores, Karma?
Yeah, the childhood trauma scores.
It's a childhood trauma score?
Yeah, ACE is the childhood trauma score, and yeah, their ACE score would be really low. The childhood trauma score is a way of identifying at-risk
I see,
kids, and so you get like a point for a dead parent and a point for divorced parents and a point for being food insecure kind of thing. But yeah, The Simpsons have a very healthy low score because their parents are trying.
One thing you guys said I should ask you about was that you had to reach out to former Jeff Rubin show guest Jay Levy, who is Weird Al Yankovic's manager. Was that for this book?
That was
for that first one.
Classroom.
What was that interaction like, trying to get Weird Al into this book?
Well, we wanted to use the lyrics for Weasel Stomping Day. That was a satire chapter section.
So Weasel Stomping Day is a Weird Al song. Is it
like the Whacking Day.
Right. That's Snakes, though. There's Whacking Day on The Simpsons about Snakes. This is a Weasel Whacking song. Okay, continue.
Right. And I have a friend acquaintance who writes for a newspaper entertainment section and promised me who said he would give me Jay's email address if I promised never to say where I got it. And so I emailed Jay and said, hey, I would like to I explained the situation. Can we use these lyrics? And he didn't even ask how I got his email address. He didn't even come up, and he was like, "Sure, you can use the lyrics." And then he just said, hey, but just make sure we get a copy of the book when it's published. So then he gave us the address to send it to, but just, you know, just one of the nicest people in the history of the world, except for Weird Al, of course, who is the nicest person in the history of the world. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I found them to be very nice, very generous. That's great that they did that. That's great that it made it into the book.
Yeah. And so, we sent it to, we got together, we signed it for Al, sent it to Al. And then a few months later, Al was doing the tour for his children's book, When I Grow Up. And I went, actually, it was longer than a few months later. It was a couple of years later. I don't remember. Everything kind of blends in my brain. And I went.
What season of The Simpsons was it near?
I don't know. And so I went to a bookshop where he was signing to have him sign a birthday card for Karma and to have him sign a copy of the book. And I said, you know, and I had met him once or twice after a concert, but this was the first time I saw him after he should have received a copy of our book. So I said, you know, hey, I'm Denise DuVernay. I co-wrote that Simpsons in the Classroom book. Did you get it from your manager? And he was like, I did. I love it. It's great. And I just about, you know, died. I was so happy. Just over the moon. And then I've seen him a couple times since then, and he always remembers who I am, and he's just such a wonderful person.
He's our hero.
Thank you for sharing that story and giving me an opportunity to not only talk about The Simpsons this week, but also Weird Al, like the other big influence on my childhood. I have one more question for you guys. There's something like new that's been going on in The Simpsons, and I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I'm curious as someone who's like studied the show what your take would be. It's possible you're not familiar with this, but are you aware of this phenomenon of, I don't know what to call this, but quote, Simpsons shitposting or possibly Simpsons wave, like vaporwave music with Simpsons cartoons? Does any of what I'm saying make sense to you?
Well, I'm familiar with the shitposting, but I don't know what
Well, all right, we'll put that aside. I mean, it's related. I don't know. I don't honestly know how to explain it. So, Simpsons shitposting, I'm going to try to explain this. This is like a new form of, I think, Simpsons fandom online, where people remix old Simpsons clips to an almost, they're almost nonsensical, to an almost nonsensical, like, post-modern degree where, like, there's, like, you're 8 levels of irony deep, you're not sure where it is, and I guess, like, steamed hams, if you've seen any, like, steamed ham memes, I think that kind
so
of,
much
that emerged from this community. Anyway, I guess I'm, like, curious, like, I don't know, what do you think of this whole phenomenon? Like, what is it? It's very unique to The Simpsons, and it's very unusual, and I, as a huge Simpsons fan, I honestly don't know what to make of it, and I think the people doing it, like, I think it comes from a place of love for The Simpsons, but I'm not always sure, and I guess I'm curious if you guys have seen this and what your reaction to it has been.
Well, I love when things like steamed hams come up into the zeitgeist, or, you know, the meme of Homer fading back into the bushes, which is now used in political commentary all the time. It's just such a, and it is one of those things where I don't know if a lot of the people who see that exactly know what it is, but, you know, a lot of the people who are creating that and posting it for the first time definitely do. You know, I have a lot of friends who do fan studies scholarship, and unfortunately, that's not something that is on my scholarship plate. But I know a lot of people who do study fan response, and almost always, you know, the impetus to go and make something out of something you love comes from a place of really deep affection and knowledge. So I think it's wonderful.
I look at it, and it's just like, I mean, it's almost like The Simpsons is a language, and like instead of words, you're using like Simpsons, instead of putting together words to make a sentence, you're like combining Simpsons jokes to like create the idea. It's like, but it's totally nonsense. And it's like, it's not like just like memes from the show. It's like its own world almost. I don't know. It's like a very interesting, and I think very unique, like evolution, of Simpsons fandom. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen a lot of this that I don't understand.
And that's what's so frustrating to me. Like, if you guys, you're teaching The Simpsons, if you don't understand it, like, what is going on here? It's something new.
But I've seen a lot that I do understand, where there's something happening politically, and then they take, and they take, you know, they take a well-known Simpsons moment.
Right,
and
that's another thing.
Which I really enjoy. Like, you know, like when, say, I don't know, Donald Trump got booed at NASCAR? It was some sort
of I know where this is going.
Racing event, and they did the
I was saying Boo Earns. I was saying Boo Earns like once a month. I would say, you know, like
right. And I love that somebody took the time to do that, and as somebody who's good at you know, manipulating things using technology in ways that I don't have the talent or the patience to do. I think that's a much better use of their fandom than writing a fan script that nobody's ever going to read. I think it's fantastic. So I welcome it. I do follow the Simpsons ship posting and the Bort posting on Facebook. Just, I don't know if those are what you're referring to.
I think the Simpsons ship posting Facebook group is ground zero Simpsons shit posting. Yeah, let me try it one more time.
Yeah.
The Facebook group Simpsons shit posting is ground zero for that. I believe that's my understanding of the situation.
And I think that it goes way back to the, you know, to the alt Simpsons.
To the news groups. So everything goes back to the news groups. Sure.
And the Simpsons or the Bort posting is also another one that they
I don't even know what Bort posting is. Is it also Simpsons shit posting?
It's Simpsons shit posting, but it's Bort posting, and it's similar, and some of them are very off the wall, and I feel like I'm missing a reference. It's kind of like watching that that Ireland Simpsons fan group. I don't know if you follow them on Twitter, but I understand them half the time because they're always referring to something political or pop culture that's happened in Ireland that I don't necessarily get because I don't live there, or because I guess I'm American and I'm an ugly American who doesn't know anything about what's happening in Ireland. and that's something I need to work on as a, you know, like my 2020 New Year's resolution. But I appreciate it nonetheless because I like Karma said, it's wonderful. It's the fandom, the way that it's become so much a part of so many people's lives is just fantastic. And, you know, we get messages like from people on Twitter or Facebook from wherever that say, you know, I love the book, I love what you're doing, and I'm like, and it's really, really cool that that there's this community of people, instead of being competitive, are being encouraging, you know, that there are other people who've written other books about The Simpsons, and then they tweet about our book too. You know, mm-hmm. and that's also just a really cool thing. And so I, you know, we return the favor and tweet about their book because their book is completely different from our book. And so it's not a competition thing. It's like, hey, the readership might be interested in this too, because they're completely different books. So
I'm sure their books are terrific, but the books we are going to plug right now are your books. They are called 1, The Simpsons in the Classroom, and then 2, The Simpsons Beloved Springfield. That's the newer one. That's the book of essays. Is there anything else we should plug while we're all here?
Just if we're around on Twitter at Simpsonology and Facebook at Simpsonology. Someone took our handle on Instagram and won't give it up. So they posted once like 5 years ago and won't give it up. So that's not us. But yeah, we're on.
Can't we be the real Simpsonology?
right.
Oh, maybe we should be the real Simpsonology.
I guess
maybe we should.
Did you?
Good idea.
Yeah, you could do that, but it is Simpson singular, not Simpsons. Simpsonology on these other social networking sites.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, guys, thanks. You stop. I love any chance to talk about The Simpsons, but here I feel like I actually learned something. I wasn't just saying quotes for an hour like I usually did. I actually learned something about The Simpsons, and it's fun.
And about Streetcar Named Desire.
Yeah, but maybe I should watch that. I hear it's like, I'm sure it's good. And I don't know. I'll watch it, and then I'll pair it with The Simpsons episode, which maybe I'll finally get. Thank you so much for stopping by the show. This was so great.
This was wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. That was a HeadGum Podcast.